The Meaning of Marxism by Paul D'Amato. Section. Origins of Racism. Racism. The singling out of one group for oppression on the basis of observable physical characteristics has a long history. Prior to the rise of Nazism, biological theories about the superiority of, quote, the white race were widespread, along with various other arguments used to justify colonial conquest and violence. But more recent bestsellers like The Bell Curve, which purport to show how innate racial differences in intelligence reveal the extent to which such ideas have made a comeback among conservatives. Clear evidence to the contrary never got in the way of this kind of spurious pseudoscience. Arguments like those in the Bell Curve are used to justify cuts in funding for social programs and affirmative action, not to serve the truth. Racists were pleased by studies of black draftees during the Second World War that found that they had lower IQs than white draftees. But, as genetic biologist Theodosius Dobzhansky points out, the average IQ of Northern African American draftees was higher, not lower, than that of white draftees from southern states. Surprisingly, this evidence was not offered as proof that whites were genetically inferior to blacks. Racism is not innate. It is a historical invention. Indeed, the concept of race itself is a historical invention, rather than a scientific fact. There is no genetic foundation for singling out groups of people according to some superficial physical characteristic and treating that group as a separate race. Nevertheless, race as a social concept is very real and has very real impact on people. Blacks in America, writes anthropologist Ashley Montague, quote, have been deprived, oppressed, discriminated against, impoverished, ghettoized, and generally excluded from the brotherhood of man. Hence, it should not be surprising that there have been and continue to be significant differences in the achievements of blacks and whites as measured by tests which have been arbitrarily standardized on middle-class whites. End quote. In the New World, the planter class adopted slavery because labor was scarce. Indians and white indentured servants were either not plentiful enough or not cheap enough. According to Caribbean historian Eric Williams, the reason for the enslavement of black Africans was economic, not racial. The African slaves' so-called, quote, subhuman characteristics, quote, were only the later rationalizations to justify a simple economic fact. Therefore, argues Williams, quote, slavery was not born out of racism. Rather, racism was the consequence of slavery. End quote. In the South, during slavery and after, racism was fostered among poor whites to prevent them from seeing that they shared with blacks the same exploiters, the white planter class. The slaveholders, wrote black abolitionist Frederick Douglass, quote, by encouraging the enmity of the poor, white laboring white man against the blacks, succeeded in making the said white man almost as much of a slave as the black himself. Both are plundered by the same plunderer. End quote. The ideology of white supremacy justified not only continental conquest over Indians and Mexicans and slavery, but also overseas expansion into the Pacific and the Caribbean. With the rise of imperialism and colonialism came attempts to put a scientific gloss on racist ideas. Social Darwinism, the idea that there is a genetic hierarchy of humans, with white conquerors at the top, became widespread. In the struggle for markets and colonies, survival of the fittest operated and put the fittest, i.e. whites, at the top. Slavery disappeared, writes Lance Selfa, quote, but racism remained as a means to justify the enslavement of millions of people by the United States, various European powers, and later Japan. End quote. In his discussion of England's oppression of Ireland, Marx got to the root of why capitalism fosters and depends on racism to this very day. Quote, in all the big industrial centers in England, there is a profound antagonism between the Irish proletarian and the English proletarian. The average English worker hates the Irish worker as a competitor who lowers wages and the standard of life. He feels national and religious antipathies for him. He regards him somewhat like the poor whites in the southern states of Northern America regarded black slaves. This antagonism among the proletarians of England is artificially nourished and kept up by the bourgeoisie. It knows that this schism is the true secret of maintaining its power. End quote. The same logic is at work under capitalism today. One has only to think of the deliberate racism fostered against Mexican immigrants. If native-born workers can be made to believe that immigrant workers threaten their jobs, if white workers can be made to hate or resent blacks, or if Americans can be made to think that Arabs and Muslims are the enemy, it makes it more difficult for workers and the oppressed to unite against their common enemy. Racist and xenophobic ideas do not benefit workers and the poor, whatever their race, sex, or ethnicity. But they do benefit the exploiters, by making sections of the exploited believe they have common interests with their exploiters because they share the same language or skin color. For example, certain industries view illegal immigrant labor as ideal because illegal immigrants cannot organize unions and live in constant fear of deportation, so it's easy to pay them next to nothing. The solution is not to restrict immigration, but to organize immigrant workers alongside native-born workers to fight the common enemy. Historically, unions have been weakest in the South. This has kept wages lower than in the rest of the country. But the reason unions have been weak in the South is purely and simply because of racism. The antagonism of whites towards blacks has been the secret by which employers in the South have kept workers from organizing successfully. The fight against racism, therefore, cannot be separated from the class struggle as a whole. As the old labor slogan tells us, an injury to one is an injury to all. The special oppression faced by one part of the working class drags down the rest. Conversely, the elimination of that oppression, the liberation of the oppressed, is the condition for lifting up all. End of section.